Welcome. We are broadcasting live from the mothership. You are tuned in and listening to Starseed Energy Radio with your host Jonah Bolt. Starseed Energy Radio, where you can always tune in to hear the colors and see the music. Starseed Energy Radio goes live in 3, 2, 1.
A lot of people just like to blame it on the aliens.
What's up, Star fam? Thanks for tuning in. You are receiving a live transmission from Starseed Energy Radio, where you can always tune in on Friday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern to hear the colors and see the music. I am your host, Jonah Bolt, and today is Friday, the 13th, April 13th, but it's a good April 13th because we have amazing guests on the show. And that track was Blue Lights off the album Anunnaki, and that is from our first guest, DJ producer Cry. And tonight we are giving away free tickets to the Genesis Festival going on Earth Day weekend next weekend. So let me first give out the call and number. It's 888-429-5471. And how we're going to do it is the first caller that calls in when Cry's interview starts, which will be in a few minutes, so pay attention, will get the tickets to the Genesis Music Festival. And joining me on the show tonight is live in Studio B. We have Chris Allen from ChrisAllenResources.com. He's a sales and business consultant and a mentor for the new age, doing business in New Earth. The music artist, as I mentioned, is DJ and producer Cry. You can check out DJCry.com and also TouchSamadhi.com. And we're going to get into some 5D galactic updates, talking about the resignations from world banks and world leaders. And then we're going to hear from our one and only Ryan Dernick, writer for GCN Communications, on some 3D world news updates, talking about all the earth changes that have been going on, the 8.8, the 8.2, big earthquakes happening last week, this week. And on the second half of the show, we're going to be joined by Dr. Rocco Errico, who's an ordained minister, international lecturer and author, spiritual counselor, and one of the nation's leading biblical scholars working from the original Aramaic texts. And then after that, we have another special guest interview with Jonathan Zapp. He is a photographer, author, teacher, paranormal researcher, philosopher, and has written extensively on psychology and contemporary mythology, and that will be on the second half of the show. We're also going to go into some updates on Occupy Wall Street protests, some earth changes, economic and financial world updates, and of course, some health and wellness updates. And again, that number is 888-429-5471, and that's a number to call in as soon as Cry's interview starts. to win some free tickets for the Genesis Festival. And talking about that, just to give you a little information on that, Ancient Grooves of the Appalachian Forest, as they dance in harmonic waves, the first song of creation, they will open up a portal of healing, love, and divine creativity, activating symbolic relationship with the earth. That is the Genesis Festival going off at Deerfields here south of Asheville, North Carolina, right by the airport. Genesis offers 3 days of electronic music showcasing world talents from psytrance, IDM, experimental music, workshops, which I'll be at on Sunday, representing Evolver. So a shout out to Evolver.net and all the Evolver peeps out there. And also manifesting unity consciousness through awareness. Check out GenesisFestival.net. We're also going to have at that festival Richard Devine live, DJ producer Cry, who's going to be interviewing with us in just a minute, and also a number of well-known DJs throughout the area. So check out Genesis Music, GenesisFestival.net. Also, two more cool events that are coming up. We have the Venus Rising and Association for Transformation. That is the Wise Wolf Council happening at Isis Cove. It's about 45 minutes west of North Carolina, the beautiful Western North Carolina mountains, and that will be Memorial Day weekend. For more information on that, you can check out shamanicbreathwork.org. I will also be attending that. We're going to do some shamanic breathwork with Linda Starwolf, and also she'll be joining us at the next event at the Galactic Gathering at Grandfather Mountain. That will be happening 2 weeks from now on April 27th through the 29th, 2012, and we'll be doing a live transmission broadcast from Grandfather Mountain, the oldest mountain in the world, 1.1 billion years old. It used to stand 50,000 feet tall, I just found out. And now it's weathered down over the years to about 6,000 feet. So it's going to be an amazing transformational weekend. We're doing breath work. We have yoga, Tai Chi workshops, all sorts of amazing stuff. So you can check out my Facebook page for more information on that. Or you can email my partner, who's also helping put on this event, zen@purelovezen@gmail.com. And Starseed Energy Radio is brought to you in part by Stephanie Riley. Stephanie Riley, she's a hypnotherapist, does past life regressions and future life progressions. She's an author, certified hypnotherapist, life coach, and weight loss specialist. Lose weight, stop smoking, control stress, and get happier now. Scientific research proves that if you change your thinking, you can change your brain. And when you change your brain, you will change your destiny. Don't settle for less than who you truly want to be. Check out StephanieRisley.com. That's StephanieRisley.com. Check that out. And, of course, always check out Starseed Energy Radio during the week for the latest news and updates. You can also follow me on my Twitter feed or my Facebook page. Check out Starseed Energy Radio's Facebook page. We are now on iTunes and also a podcast. We have a live RESS feed, so you always get automatic updates through iTunes on that. And please, for support, like our Facebook page out there, Starseed Energy Radio, and check out our YouTube channel. We're now putting up the YouTube videos of each show that we're broadcasting, and we've had amazing response. We're over tens of thousands of hits on those YouTube videos, so check that stuff out. And, of course, the new Android app. Check that out. It's on the homepage of StarseedEnergyRadio.com. We now have an Android app, and the iPhone app is in the process of being made. And, of course, as always, check out StarseedEnergyRadio.com for the latest in guests, music. You have a new music section up, and also on news articles under the news section. So always stay with StarseedEnergyRadio.com. And before we get started, always like to give a shout out to the Galactic Federation of Light, all the enlightened beings out there, the Star Warriors, the Starship Commanders, Palladians, Octorians, Andromedians, Octorians, and all multiple dimensional beings of light. And a big shout out to Metatron and the Metatronic Councils of Light. And a shout out to light, love, art, music, creativity, and anything else I forgot. Thank you all for your support and love and the good vibrations. And this is a year of transformation. We've been getting amazing responses last 2 months. So thank you, everybody, for out there. And with that, we're going to jump into our first interview with DJ producer Cry, also known as Touch Samadhi. You can check out DJCry.com and TouchSamadhi.com. And with that, Cry, thank you so much for joining us on the show. How are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Doing great, doing great. Let's jump into how you first got started in electronic music and the IDM and the amazing electronic music scene that we have going on here in Asheville.
I started out writing industrial music in the early 90s. Did the whole rave scene eventually, and then started getting into the techno and learning how to DJ. Played a bunch of shows all over North Carolina and the Southeast, but it really didn't all click until I started getting into Goa Trance, because I got such a connection from this music. But, you know, it's like more than music. It's like mind yoga. It's like sacred geometry flows from its source. So whether you're on drugs or not, the music will lift you in higher states of consciousness, make you aware of the bigger picture in yourself and the cosmos. It will, like, connect you and everything around you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been involved with the electronic music since the early 90s and the rave scenes. Oh, did we lose Cry? Looks like we lost Cry. Well, this is a good time for anyone listeners out there. If you call in right now, the first listeners to call into the station will get the free tickets. And where our station is getting Cry back. We lost Cry at 11:11 p.m. So for everyone out there, it's 11:11, make a wish, and the station is getting him back. And as I was going to say to Cry, I'll just tell the listeners out there, I got involved with the early rave scene in the early 90s and definitely had my first spiritual experiences at those events. I believe that the Star Children, all of us, will pull together to experience those first downloads, those first synchronicities. And I remember tons of different events where I experienced certain things. And back in those days, you know, the experiences that I had, I just blamed it on the drugs. Now being sober and in a different state of consciousness, I now understand that a lot of those experiences and a lot of those things that I saw and felt were actually not just the drugs. They were just these experiences that we got together because of our vibrations together and the love that were at these events. So the electronic music scene from the early 90s and the rave scene, I'd definitely be involved with. And Cry is back with us. Cry, tell us how you've seen the electronic music scene change and shift the last few years. Oh, you there? Well, the station said he's back, but I don't hear him. Cry, you there?
This is Ryan.
Ryan, you with us? All right.
Yes.
Well, we had Cry, but looks like we lost Cry, so now we have Ryan Dernick on the line. So we'll jump into our second interview, and we will go to the Earth changes, the economic financial updates. There's been a lot going on. And jump into the earth changes. There's been a huge earthquake that happened off Sumatra, 8.2. The aftershock was like 8.7, 8.8. Go into it. What can you tell us more about it? Ryan, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, Cry. We got Cry back. Okay.
Yep,
Cry, you with
I'm
us?
Back.
All right. Okay, so we're talking about the electronic music scene and the intention of the music festivals and how things have been. How have you seen the electronic scene and the music festivals change these last few years?
They've changed a lot, especially over the past 20 years. You know, a lot of people think that the electronic parties are just something that the kids go to, you know. Like one of my favorite sayings is, you know, it looks like a rave, smells like a rave, sounds like a rave. Well, it's got to be one. But, you know, a lot of these people don't know that, you know, everything's coming together. There's like a shift that's going on. And it's been happening for a long time, you know. But these festivals and parties are starting to be more of a communal event, you know, like on a larger scale. You know, people are more in tune with the environment and themselves. They're there to enjoy life, share experiences, you know, from being outside to taking workshops, from yoga to Tai Chi, go on plant walks. And, you know, of course, they are there for the experience of dancing all night and what till the sun comes up, you know. It's more of like a true self spirituality at its finest, you know. And it only happens in a few spots around the world right now, but I think it's all growing and it's all coming together. And especially, you know, since I moved to Asheville in like 98, it's just been amazing ever since. And it hasn't stopped. It's only continued to grow and be more and more communal and everyone's together on it.
Absolutely. And Asheville is such a pocket of light and so many talented people here. It's a great place to be. And real quickly, tell us about any future projects. I know you're going to be at the Genesis Festival going on next weekend. Any other events and projects you're working on you'd like to tell the listeners about?
There's Pangea. I think it's on the weekend of the 22nd of May. And then that's near Asheville. It's about an hour near towards Brevard. But you can can check out. I think it's PangeaRecords.com. There's also the Unitas Festival. That's happening in Tennessee, I think, in Knoxville, and that's like the first weekend in June. All of these parties are on our website on thetouchsomebody.com. Then we're all flying out to California to the Gemini Festival, and that's the party that our friend Witch Doctor puts on every year, and that'll be amazing. So, I mean, that's, and then we also have our Touch Somebody Fall Festival, and it's out at Deerfields in North Carolina, outside of Asheville. This will be year number 9, so, you know, we've been doing it for quite a while there. So that's around September 21st, I think, for the fall equinox.
That's what's up, and you can check out more of your information, music projects, and events at DJ Cry, that's KRY.com, and also Touch Samadhi, which is TouchSamadhi.com. And just to let all the people know out there, we have Joe who called in on line 3, and Joe is the first caller tonight to win the Genesis tickets. And Joe, stay on the line. We're going to get some more of your information to make sure you get the tickets. So we will see Joe next weekend at the Genesis Festival, and also Cry. Cry, thanks so much for coming on. We'll see you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, man.
We'll see you soon. Excellent. And with that, we'll jump right into Ryan Dernick, who is also with us. And Ryan, back to you. Let's jump into some earth changes, talking about the huge earthquake that's going on.
Definitely, yeah. 2 days ago, there was two earthquakes back-to-back within about an hour and a half of each other. An 8.6 was the initial one. It was off the west coast of northern Sumatra. The depth was about 22.9 kilometers, or about 15 miles. And the other one happened thereafter off the west coast of northern Sumatra. And that also was about an 8.2 magnitude. Initial estimates of the initial 8.6 previously were actually by the U.S., or not the USGS, but the International Geologic Community. They actually said that it was at a 9.1, which was would have equivocated to the last year's March 11th earthquake of 9.1 in Japan and the subsequent tsunami, and thereafter the fallout from the Fukushima reactors from their core meltdowns, and that is still ongoing over there. In between those two earthquakes, there was a 6.0 north of the Indian Ocean, and that was at a 9.8 kilometers. And thereafter, there was a multitude of earthquakes in North Indian Ocean and off the west coast of northern Sumatra from 5.8, anywhere from there to 4.7. And then later in the day, yesterday in Michoacán, or the day before Michoacán, Mexico, there was a 6.5, and that was at a 20-kilometer depth, or about 10 miles. Thereafter, there's been a bunch of pings going on in Utah. An actual sizable one was a 4.2 in Utah near Yellowstone National Park, and that was at a 10.6 kilometers or 4 miles depth. And then thereafter, there was a 2.5 and a subsequent 2.5 thereafter. And those all range from anywhere from 10.6 kilometers to 3.2 kilometers. Thereafter, yesterday, in midday, there was the Gulf of California had a 6.2, and that was at a 10.1 kilometers. And also thereafter, they had another aftershock of 6.9. That was just yesterday. And of course, Sumatra, Indonesia, has also been pinging yesterday at 5.0 to 4.7 in the North Indian Ocean. And one thing to note about the earthquake that happened off of the coast of western coast of northern Sumatra, they felt the tremors over 1,000 miles away in northern Calcutta, if you can believe that. So the whole plate, the Indian plate, the Ring of Fire, all throughout the Pacific, and then actually goes along the Aleutian Chain down along Oregon and along California. And actually, PBS did a report recently in the last week, because there was a 5.6. Remember, last week we had off the shore of Oregon, and they said they're preparing for a large earthquake, and they noted that there was alarming and disturbing things that they came to light when they saw of evidence what happened to the soils. They thought liquefaction was just initially would just occur in soils that were mostly sand, but what they saw were actually a lot of soils became liquid in and around Japan, even far away from the area where they did the landfill near Tokyo Bay. So these alarming trends are having researchers redact on what their forecasts are, and they are noting that they're definitely feeling that it's around the corner, around the pike, that there's going to be a large earthquake on the west coast of the United States. It's just there's a lot of movement anywhere, all in and around that area in Central America and South America, and then over in Sumatra and in the and around the Indian Ocean. So it would lead one to think that geologically we're going to have some kind of event on the west coast of the United States. I know that they've said that that's portended for many decades, but I do think that time is possibly due for that, some kind of event to occur over there.
Wasn't there also some 6.0 and 6.2 earthquakes off the west coast, California, out at sea this week?
Those were in the Gulf of California. The Gulf of California is actually the bay that's in within the Bay of Baja, California.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about, on the peninsula, and then it's actually closer to that area would be closer to parts of Arizona, the bay over there, because it's kind of a tiny little bay, a narrow bay, that it's adjacent to mainland Mexico, and also if you go across the bay, there's Baja California. But yeah, that's why it's called the Gulf of California. But yeah, there were some small earthquakes offshore of California, but those were only about 3.7.
Gotcha. So, there was something out there. Definitely the earth is shaking up. Things are speeding up. We've been following this stuff all year, and things are intensifying. Now, let's jump to any Occupy Wall Street updates, any financial updates, anything big happening with Occupy or the economy, financials.
In regards to Occupy, they've basically been thwarted, and a lot of cities have been pushed out. As you and I know, they've even gotten legislation passed in places like Tennessee that says there will be no camping, there will be no picketing. So there goes unfortunately, our First Amendment right, our freedom of speech. For the most part, there's been some occasional glimmers of an Occupy movement still, but for the most part, that has gone to the wayside. The big front runner now, the big show, is the you could say escalating tensions racially from this whole Trayvon Martin unfortunate shooting that took place. Again, if you listen to the playbacks on the when they with the police were talking with emergency dispatch, they say that they're
up. Looks like we lost Ryan. All right, well, with that, let's go ahead and take a quick break. We're going to hear some more of Cry's music, and when we come back, joining us live in Studio B is Chris Allen, and we're going to get into some amazing stuff that he's working on and has been doing for a long time. And with that, enjoy another track from Cry. This is
It's almost as if they all came from different places near us.
Welcome back. I don't know what's going on. It's Friday the 13th. We keep losing guests and getting lines mixed up, but we're still pushing on. First, just want to give a health and wellness update that we've been doing since the first of the year. This article is in regards to the FDA assault on herbal cancer products continues with raid on a Missouri distributor. This is from naturalnews.com. You should check out that site. They put out amazing stuff. The news article says, at the prompting of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA is part of its ongoing war against natural cancer treatments. Federal marshals recently seized a number of anti-cancer products from Notions and Things in Missouri, based distributor of skin salves and other products. According to the FDA announcement issued on March 29, 2012, more than 1,600 containers of skin salve were seized as part of the bust. And this has been ongoing all year. They're cutting down on raw milk, things that cure cancer. I mean, anything that wants to help the people or anything that's good for the people, the FDA has just been cracking down. It's ridiculous. Check out naturalnews.com. There's some amazing articles. And now jumping to Studio B Live, we have none other than Chris Allen. And Chris Allen is local here in Asheville, North Carolina. And Chris Allen has an amazing new website. And what Chris does is he's basically a business consultant, sales consultant, and mentor for the New Age community. And with that, Chris, thank you so much for coming to the studio. How are you this evening?
I'm great, Jonah. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So first jump into your business, how you got started, and how you've shifted from your original business, which was very corporate, very 3D, into what you're doing now.
Great. That's a good question, Jonah. So I actually started in business back in 1979. I had been a teacher of meditation for about 8 years. And so even my first entry into the field of business was kind of on that ground of a spiritual path that I had been on, and the experience of my own experience of connecting with who I am as a human and spiritual being, and then also teaching, which was an incredible experience for me because I was able to see and impart that same experience for other people where, you know, they'd come out of their first meditation and you could just see the transformation in their eyes, in their face, a sense of calm and peace, relaxation, a sense of connection with who they were, you know. And I'm reminded of a quote by Teilhard de Chardin, the French philosopher. You are not a human being in search of a spiritual experience. You're a spiritual being immersed in a human experience.
Mm.
So over the years, as I got into mainstream corporate America, I was in sales for over 35 years, and 15 years of which selling to Fortune 500 companies with a 200-employee global company in user experience research and design of user interfaces for software and websites to make them more user-friendly. But and the overriding theme was making a meaningful and purposeful connection with the customer. Always for me, the customer came first. It was not about trying to push a product on somebody, trying to get them to buy something that they didn't need. It was about really, truly caring about the customer and who they are as a human and spiritual being, and making that alignment with our products so that I was of service and bringing value to what it was they sought to achieve in their business or their personal life. So what I was inspired to do in just this year, actually this was about a 2 or 3 year vision that took me 2 or 3 years to get to the point of having the courage to launch, was to step out and say, you know what, we need to connect spirituality with the business sector.
Hmm.
We've seen that the transformations that are happening on the planet are a rising of consciousness on the part of the population. Consumers are much more intuitive in their choices. They have many more choices. They're much more sensitive to being led down a path that's not valuable for them, that doesn't have integrity. Business is more and more, I think, recognizing that they need to bring purpose and value to their customers that is much more spiritually oriented. And when I say spiritual, you know, I'm not talking about something that's it's not esoteric. Really, spirituality is wholeness. Spirituality is integration of right brain and left brain thinking. And these kinds of concepts of how to engage in business in a more purposeful, valuable way in society are being brought about by many, many other voices in the world. I have some examples here that I thought would be fun to share. Many of your viewers, I'm sure, and listeners know about Deepak Chopra. He's
Absolutely.
Come out, yeah. He's come out with a new book recently called The Soul of Leadership. And I have a short article. He was interviewed in Ode Magazine. I don't know if your viewers can see that on the YouTube. Pick up the mic here. But he was asked, how is spirituality linked to leadership? His response: a great leader is an agent of change who has clarity of vision and knows how to make that vision a reality. Such a person comes from a level of core consciousness, which is what we call the soul. So I think these terms of soul and spirituality are beginning to be mainstream now, even in corporate America. You're seeing books come out about the soul of business. And this is what I'm leveraging in my website. I'm speaking about the ability to consult and train and mentor people and connect them with the real passion and value that inspired the creation of the business and how they can instantiate that throughout their entire operation, their employee relationships, their marketing, and most importantly, how do they connect with their customers in a meaningful way that builds a loyal following? So these things are all about creating better profit, but the profit is based in something that has a deeper sense of meaning and value to the customers and to the planet.
And now, what are some of the things that you offer people to really develop their intuitiveness, their soul guidance? I know you're a mentor and you have a lot of new age things. What are some pointers that people could do to tell the listeners, some pointers that they could do in their own business or their own life to be more soul and intuitive oriented in their own businesses?
I think one of the most important things is to really connect with who they are. I feel that in sales is all about connection. And you want to connect with your customer and build trust as quickly as possible and maintain that trust and be sure that you're in alignment with their goals and objectives. And you've aligned your services with those goals and objectives of theirs. But to have that kind of connection with your customer, they're really buying you in a sense. They're buying the trust and confidence in what you're bringing to the picture. And if you don't have a deep connection with who you are and how you fit into the universe, how you're connected with your customer, and in fact, we all really are truly one being. You know, it's one life force that we share. Consciousness is one. And if you are able to kind of engage in your own self-discovery and reach that kind of awareness in yourself, then you're going to bring much more power and connection in your business activities.
Absolutely. And you can check out more of Chris's work and what he does, what he has to offer. He also has a Sales Mystic blog on his site. That's chrisallenresources.com, C-H-R-I-S-A-L-L-E-N, resources.com. And you could also call Chris for a free 30-minute discovery session, and his number is 828-645-0360. And with that, Chris, thank you so much for coming to Studio B live in Asheville, North Carolina, and we hope to have you back on the show sometime this year.
Thanks, Jonah.
Excellent.
Happy Friday the 13th to all your listeners.
That's it. Thank you. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Rocco Errico, and also Jonathan Zapp will be joining us. Jonathan Zapp is also going to be on the second half of the show, and wait to hear some of the experiences that he is going to tell us about working with the metaphysical community and also with the paranormal. So with that, we're going to listen to another track from DJ Cry. And this track is called the Anunnaki mix. It is Proto Sapien. Enjoy.
I think all various races from other extraterrestrials and anything manipulated image. They are in the image of the extraterrestrial that came to this planet. But I think all various races from other extraterrestrials and anything
I'm
right, and welcome back. You're tuned in and listening to Starseed Energy Radio. And now joining us on the show is Dr. Rocco Errico. He is an ordained minister, international lecturer, and author, spiritual counselor, and one of the nation's leading biblical scholars working with the original Aramaic texts. And Dr. Errico, Rocco, how are you? Thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you.
Excellent. So first, let's jump into one of my favorite questions that I love to ask all the guests that I have on the show. You do so much work and you're involved with so many metaphysical things and religious things. But when was your first awakening yourself to things were a lot different than what we were taught in school and how we've been programmed? When was your first awakening to when things were different?
Well, I was 16 years old and I started having visions and dreams. And went to the priest to try and explain it, and he couldn't do it. No one could help me with it. But that was my beginning. That's how I started. And that started me on my quest, searching. And from then on, I searched everything, checked all the different denominations and religions and beliefs. And then I realized it hadn't to do, this has nothing to do with beliefs. It's your actions and how you treat yourself and how you treat others. Began to simplify it for me. But it came through visions and dreams, and I was always guided that way throughout my life.
Wow! Now,
that's in a nutshell.
Yeah, I know you've had numerous awards and done lectures all over the country, all over the world. You also have a doctorate in philosophy from the School of Christianity in Los Angeles. You have a doctorate in divinity, and you also have a doctorate in sacred theology from the School of Christianity in Los Angeles. How was it being semi-awakened or awakened, and you're going to these schools getting doctorates in Christianity? How was that, those experiences for you? Must have been interesting.
Well, first of all, I always, in the beginning when I was first going to all the different seminaries, it was killing me. I couldn't take it very much. So I began to search out other schools which were more open and were ready for something new, and that's all those other schools, the ones that two that you mentioned was more along metaphysical lines. And then, of course, I was indoctrinated in the beginning, but then dropped all of that. And then I began to research Greek language, Hebrew, Aramaic, and that's when I met Dr. George M. Lamsa, the one who translated the entire Bible from Aramaic into English. And I worked with him 10 years. We were working together, and I'm continuing his work.
And it's amazing, you know, that you said your awakening was 16, because a lot of us had some sort of epiphany or realization that things were different. I myself was around 13, 14, and then you went to these schools and you studied and metaphysical schools and got doctorates, and you really immersed yourself in trying to really learn everything you could about different religions and different types of spirituality, metaphysical stuff. You got doctorates. And then you sort of pull all that together, and you wrote several books. The one that I was that saw on your site and really struck me was Let There Be Light. That talks about the translations in the Bible that were misinterpreted and other things. Tell the listeners about the book and how you got to write it and what it all entails.
Well, basically, that book was a course that I put together when I was working with Dr. George M. Lamsa, who was a theologian from the Near East. And like I said, he translated the entire Bible from Aramaic into English, not from book learning. Aramaic was his native tongue. He was from the area in northern Iraq, which was a part of Turkey and still is a part of Turkey. And they were an isolated group that lived there, and when he came to America, he didn't realize that our Bible translation was so different from what he understood. And so what I did is we worked together 10 years, so I thought there's a way to be able to get all this together and put it in a course. So what I did was come up with 7 keys that unlock the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. And that's what the book Let There Be Light is. And I go into translation differences, idiomatic differences, mysticism, visions, dreams, healing, and then the culture background, how they think, the philosophy behind the culture. And that's what that book is. But I wrote it in simple language. I try to stay away from theological jargon and terminology that just confused people. I wasn't writing for other scholars. I was writing for people who want to know the simple truth. And really, when you know it from Aramaic, it's very simple. Nothing difficult. We made it difficult. For example, the idiom that we always use, that Jesus is the one who used it, is the term hellfire. And that in the Aramaic language was not a place where God roasts people or burns people. Hellfire, Gehenna de Nura, is how you say that in Aramaic. What it means is don't do or say things that put yourself in torment or things you can't take back, that you burn for inside and mentally and emotionally. And Jesus was using idiomatic expressions. And what we've done, what theologians have done, what so many people have done with the Bible, is build doctrines and dogmas and creeds. For instance, like the Apostles' Creed, the apostles never heard of it. We invented it later on. But there's so many things in Scripture that we built creeds on that weren't meant to be creeds. They were idiomatic expressions, or it had to do with the cultural notion behind a particular action. But today, people study things from books, and it takes more than books. You have to be familiar with the culture. That's the trouble with the Bible. The Bible is a borrowed book. It doesn't come from the West. It comes from the Near East and from Semitic people and the way they thought, the psychology, the symbolism, the metaphors, all those things that they use. But it's simple once you unravel it. Hello?
Okay, we got you back. We're having a little technical difficulties tonight. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Okay, so
I don't know how much of I was heard.
Well, you just cut out the last 10 seconds, so go right into it.
Okay. What I was talking about was the idiomatic expressions in the Bible, and then there's a lot of mistranslations. Every place where it says God is a jealous God, the Aramaic doesn't say that. It says zealous, not jealous. And in Hebrew, it's the same way, because it's the same word. It should have been translated passionate, or God was impassioned. All these terms are used. They portrayed God as a human being so the people could understand spirit. And they used human terms to explain spiritual things. You know, that's the trouble. Spiritual things are invisible, and you have to use what is visible to explain the invisible.
Hey, you also have a book, Set a Trap for God.
Oh, yeah, Setting a Trap for God.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's the book I wrote on the Lord's Prayer, or what we call the Our Father. And the word prayer, to begin with, in Aramaic, is the word slotha. Slotha comes from the root word sla, which means to trap. See, most people think prayer is telling God what to do or trying to get God to meet a need. But the word prayer means to trap. A modern term that we use today is meditation. In other words, the word prayer, slotha, means that you set your mind open to receive. It's similar to the Kabbalah. And in the Kabbalah, that means to be receptive, to receive. And so prayer then is to trap all the good there is, to trap all that is spiritually there for us, and then to act on it and bring it into our realm where we live. So that's what prayer is. But you have to be quiet and still in order to trap. I often use prayer using this illustration with a DVD. There's two kinds you can get, either the kind that is blank or the kind that already has a program on it. When you go in prayer, you got to go in with a blank disc. So what is being transmitted, you'll pick up on. That's the meaning of prayer. That's why I talk about setting a trap for God, meaning trapping all the good of God there is, that God's thoughts, angels, all these different things. It's all Semitic symbolism, but we made it very difficult and difficult to understand. So that's what I wrote about in the book. I explained every verse of the Lord's Prayer. Each line of that prayer is an attunement. You are tuning in and setting up the vibration to receive. And that's what I did in the prayer. And there's a major difference in the prayer, too, by the way, when we pray it. Everyone says, do not lead us into temptation. That is not the correct way to pray. It should be, and do not let us enter into temptation. Even Benjamin Franklin didn't like that in the prayer. Do not lead us into temptation. God, who is light, life, love, and truth, can't lead you into temptation. And Benjamin Franklin didn't like it, and so he changed it. I have the history books on that. He changed it to, and keep us out of temptation, which he really got the idea of the Aramaic meaning of that word. And although I don't know if he knew Aramaic or not, but he got the meaning. And in literally in Aramaic, when you understand it, it's, and do not let us enter into temptation. Keep me out of trouble, in other words, and lead me into paths of light and love and understanding and compassion.
That's it.
And that's the key, and nonviolence, all of that, that's the key. And
that's it.
And I wrote all that in the book, explaining everything.
And
the word amen is very interesting in Aramaic. That is an Aramaic word, even though we say it in English, amen. Amen means, using modern phraseology, means I'll stand by it, I'll back it up. Or in really plain language, I'm with you, man. It's an expression, see. And so amen, that's how they used to make agreements. When they would say amen, that was the same as if you signed a written contract. Those were oral agreements they made in the ancient days when they would say amen. And that's why it was put at the end of a prayer, that you'll back it up, you'll stand by it, you'll go through with it.
And you can find out more about your books, and also you have a free webinar coming up that you're going to be doing. It's free, and you have all this information on your website, which is noohra.com, and that also means the word light in Aramaic.
Yes, or you can do rockoaerico.com for the webinar.
Excellent. That is a free webinar you'll be doing, and when's the date on that?
I do it the first Saturday of each month. I'll do it the first Saturday in May. I think it's the second. I don't have a calendar here in front of me. And then I'll do it on the first Saturday in June. I think that's the 7th.
Excellent. And again, Dr. Rocco, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on. And we hope to have you back sometime this year, next year, and give us an update on how everything is going. And you said it best. God is light. God is love. God is not fear. God does not judge. And couldn't said it better myself. So thank you so much for coming on. You have a great
thank
weekend.
Thank you, Jonah.
Speak soon. Excellent. And with that, we are going to jump to our next guest. And our next guest is Jonathan Zapp. Jonathan is a photographer, author, teacher, a paranormal researcher, and philosopher who has written extensively on psychology and contemporary mythology. Jonathan also grew up in the Bronx and attended the Bronx High School of Science, and he graduated college up there with honors in philosophy and English and received his master's degree in English from NYU. And that's a tough place, just a little side note, to really get into the metaphysical stuff, at least for me and a lot of my friends that are or have lived in New York for about 6 years, from 98 to 2004. And New York is a very dense, dense place. So to all the light workers out there and all the people who are in New York and who bring light and love to New York, shout out to you guys, because it is a very loud, dense place, and it takes extra work, I believe, for light workers up there to do their stuff. And now with us is Jonathan Zapp. And he is joining us. And you can check out zaporacle.com. And with that, Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you? And Jonathan, you there? Oh, looks like we're having some more technical difficulties, but that's okay. It's Friday the 13th, and we're all for it, so it happens. We just had a Mars retrograde this last couple months since the early January, so I'm not surprised that we keep losing guests like that. So anyways, just with that, I'll tell you a little bit more about Jonathan, and he's also very big into the singularity archetype, which we'll talk about. He does several workshops and webinars and seminars all around. You can check out zaporacle.com. And Jonathan has tons of stuff. He's got pictures up there. He does amazing stuff. He was at Alex Gray's house. It was Alex Gray at Cosm out there. And, you know, lots of different spiritual leaders and stuff out there that he's talked to and worked with. And just an amazing person. So definitely check out his site. And I think Jonathan's back with us. Jonathan, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, excellent. So just giving the listeners a brief description about some of the stuff you've done or involved in. And we were talking about the singularity archetype. And let's go ahead and jump into that. Tell us what that is and how you first got started in it.
Okay. I think given the limits of time, we have about 15 minutes. Is that right?
Yeah, about give or take. We're going to go a little over tonight. We've been having technical difficulties all night because it's Friday the 13th. So
okay.
I forgot about
Friday the 13th. Okay. So
that's it.
I'll be concise, but we have a little room to go over, in other words.
Excellent.
So yep, I think the most interesting way to present it will be to to tell you about how I got into it first, and then we'll talk about what it is, the singularity archetype. So, like a lot of these creative obsessions, it began in childhood, and there were some shocking paranormal experiences I won't get into now, but I was kind of tuned into the paranormal, let's say at an early age. And then one very striking experience that was really my first formal encounter with the singularity archetype was watching a black and white 1960 British science fiction movie called The Village of the Damned. And I remember seeing it. It was, you know, during the daytime, not even at night, just sitting there watching it with my dad. I was like 13 or 14 years old, probably more like 13. And it was like a religious experience. I had seen many science fiction movies, many even excellent ones, but this was a completely different order. It felt like it was coming from inside me. It was like a religious experience. And it seemed to have this incredible, uncanny significance. And but I had no way of explaining what that uncanny significance was exactly. I know it was related to some of the paranormal experiences, but I just filed it away in my mind. And then within a year or so of that experience, another one was reading the science fiction novel Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke as a high school student. And that was a complete shock because here were things that I thought were my own most creative and individual ideas that I assumed I would, you know, write my own science fiction stories about. And here they were in this book that was published 4 years before I was even born. How was that possible? and I had no idea at the time. And then in my last year of undergraduate college, I was only 20 years old, but I had already had some successes the previous year in unraveling certain mysteries or certain obsessions, and I get into what those were in my book, which, by the way, is called Crossing the Event Horizon, the Singularity Archetype in Human Metamorphosis. People can find out about it and read the first 40 pages or listen to them as a podcast for free on my website, zaporacle.com. Anyway, so in that senior year, as a philosophy honors paper, I decided I was going to find out, what is the meaning? Why these obsession with these like couple of particular science fiction works and a few other related things? And it was actually my mom, who was a psychologist for 44 years, who said, well, you should read this guy Carl Jung and his idea of the archetypes and the collective unconscious. So based on that suggestion, I stood in a college library in front of the beautiful, black, elegant Princeton Bullingen collected edition, you know, works edition of Jung's collected works. And but I'm like, you know, looking at it a bit skeptically, like, what's this dead Swiss guy who, like, reached manhood in the 19th century going to tell me, this, you know, strange Jewish kid from the Bronx, about my weird sci-fi obsessions? But I'm like, okay, let me check the index. There's an index volume. And I see, wow, he wrote a book called Flying Saucers, A Modern Myth of Things Seen in the Sky. Well, that was something I was obsessed with, and it was in both Village of the Damned and Childhood's End. And so I go to that book. And I see, wow, he wrote this right near the end of his life. And as I, like, skimmed through it, I could see he was obsessed with the subject. In fact, at the end of the book, after the end, there was, like, an afterword. And then after the afterword, there was an epilogue. And then, like, after the epilogue, there was a supplement. There were, like, three afterthoughts, basically, at the end of his book. And the third and last one was his analysis of a British science fiction novel called The Midwich Cuckoos by John Wyndham. Well, as I already knew, that was the novel that Village of the Damned was based on. So it was kind of like Jung, like a wizard bearing a torch, you know, and as introducing himself as my spiritual grandfather and guide, stepping out of the bookcase like a holographic projection of a wizard, and I basically stood on his shoulders, because without his discoveries about the nature of archetypes and the collective unconscious, I would not have been able to make sense of this. But he had come to some parallel conclusions to some of my early tentative conclusions about that book. And he ended it with a very strange note, the whole book. He said, like, and so the negative ending of the story leaves room for doubt. You know, very odd end for a book from somebody who had such thorough insight. So it was as if, or was, where he left off was exactly where I picked up. So it felt like there was even a level of destiny or something, or something about my investigation into what I later called the singularity archetype. And this is a pattern that, well, let's first talk a little bit about archetypes. This is one of Jung's great discoveries that illustrates that there is a collective unconscious. Materialist people, people who naively follow scientism, a set of naive assumptions that they presume is scientific but actually is ungrounded and full of philosophical holes and empirical holes. People assume that we're born like blank slates, and that then we're just programmed by, there's some genetic programming, but otherwise it's just outside conditioning. But what Jung and his followers showed is that there are these primordial ideas or images in the collective unconscious called archetypes, and we see clear evidence of this because civilizations and tribal cultures who were completely disconnected by time and space would have the identical cultural forms. And a really good example is the hero cycle. If you remember Joseph Campbell's book, A Hero with 1,000 Faces, and this was numerically modest because the hero has billions of faces. It shows up everywhere, and not only does this archetypes show up, but all these phases that the hero goes through, a call to adventure, a refusal, answering the call, descending into darkness, and so forth, getting a spirit guide. You know, you can find this in the Star Wars movies, you can find it in ancient papyrus scrolls, you can find it in any culture you care to look at, from the east to the west, you know, and so forth, because it's an archetype. And an archetype is not just like an object that we contemplate, it's also considered to be a living agency. It is a subject. They can be said to have intentions and to be, you know, we have an interactive relationship with them. We alter them a little bit, but they also alter us. And so I believe I've discovered an archetype, the singularity archetype, and basically the way it appears, and I've recorded many different examples and people's dreams and science fiction stories and religious prophecies. Some of the very first occurrences might be in stuff like the Book of Revelation. And basically what happens is a kind of rupture of plane event, like something completely shocking, like, you know, an asteroid is going to destroy the Earth, or like there's some incredible upheaval happens, and it seems like everything might be destroyed. But then, at least in some versions, there'll be a shift of vantage, and what looked like the worst thing in the world is revealed to be a transcendent evolutionary event. It looks apocalyptic in the usual sense of that term, to the ego standing on Earth, but to a higher perspective, it's revealed to be the revealing of a transcendent evolutionary event, and of course apocalypse means unveiling in the original Greek. And then there's a kind of crossing an evolutionary event horizon, And this is associated with special lights, with eyes, uncanny eyes, and with spirals, and spirals in the sky, even. And then some of the things that happen as human species is transformed by this evolutionary event horizon is a collective telepathic network and a form of communication, a visual telepathy, a form of communication, which I call logos beheld, where instead of expressing linguistic content with the little mouth noises that we make like we're doing on the radio, it is more like projecting movies or mutual dreaming and this type of thing. And there's all kinds of evidence that the singularity archetype is not just a idea or a notion, but actually many aspects of it are already happening, and it refers both on two different scales, one to the event horizon of the species, what's called eschaton, like the end of the species, and all species have an end, so this is not a fantastical idea. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen anytime soon. It doesn't say when it's going to happen. But it also relates to the personal event horizon that is guaranteed for us called death, a portal across which everything changes. And when people have near-death experiences, they actually, in an empirical way, experience the very things that the singularity archetype suggests. Like, they experience a visual telepathy. They experience an ability to completely expand their awareness. And it's also associated, like it is in the movie Avatar, with breaking free of the corporeal body. And the evidence from near-death experience shows that the position of the materialist, called neurological materialism, that consciousness is a product, if it's admitted to exist at all, of a functioning brain, completely fails with near-death experience, where somebody can have a completely non-functioning brain with no electrical activity, like the Pam Reynolds case I described in detail in my book, and yet have an incredibly expanded consciousness, cross an event horizon where there'll be a visual telepathy, where there'll be a far greater form of consciousness, and then come back and tell about it, and it's often with, like, empirically strong results, like when you're seeing things when your eyes were taped shut and you had no brain, no electrical activity in your brain, but you were able to hear and see things that were unlikely events that occurred among the surgeons that no one could know unless they had functioning senses and a functioning brain. And no one in any conventional way, that is. So this is what the singularity is about. It's a resonance, it could be said to be flowing backward in time, that tells us about an event horizon we are approaching as a species and about the meaning of personal death as well.
Wow, and you have a lot of this information also on your website, zatoracle.com, and you also do some workshops. Do you have some workshops coming up where people can also learn more about this?
Well, one way they can learn about it for free once they've paid the entrance price to a wonderful music festival called Sonic Bloom. It's kind of like Colorado's pre-Burning Man thing. I've been there once before, and it was just top-notch electronica and, like, the best DJs you've ever heard, which is not even my kind of music, but I could just tell it was, like, you know, the very best stuff, like Bass Nectar and so forth. And it's set in a beautiful area, you know, and so forth. And I'm not making any money from it, but I will be, but I'm just, besides a free invitation, but it might cost, like, $120 for 4 days. And then I'll be there doing a free workshop on the singularity archetype, and I'll be doing free dream interpretation and oracle reading. Either my oracle and or the I Ching, depending on Wi-Fi availability and stuff like that. So that would be a good place where people could meet up with me.
Excellent. And I wish we had more time because there's so much you could talk about, I know, but we just focused on one topic tonight, and
okay.
The singularity is great. And zaporacle.com is your website, and you also have do you have any newsletters or emails or anything like that?
People can sign up for a free newsletter on there, and they can interact with the Zap Oracle, an oracle that has 665 cards for free.
Excellent. And do you also offer any type of services where people can contact you for readings or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I do dream interpretation. I do oracle readings. I do what I call expert generalist consultations on almost any subject. I consider myself a generalist, but I've learned to observe a lot of processes and have insights about things, so people can get that from me, or creativity coaching, or help with writing, or editing, or photography.
Excellent. Well, Jonathan Zapp, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll try to get you back in the next year or so and give us an update on how things are going. Wish we had more time. And with that, check out zapporacle.com. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Appreciate it. Take care. Have a good evening. Bye.
Excellent. Thank you. You too. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear some more of DJ Cry's Anunnaki album. And when we come back, we'll do a wrap-up. This track is called Sumerian Technology. We'll be right back. Happy Friday the 13th. We've had crazy mixed signals tonight, but we just pushed through it as always. And I want to thank all the guests for coming on the show. And next, coming up on Starseed Energy Radio on April 20th, next week, we have Anthony Beckett coming on, an analytical chemist, pharmaceutical scientist, and also exopolitical activist. Check out anthonybeckett.com and also thisisdisclosure.com, where he heads the Disclosure Project over in the UK. He'll be joining us. And on April 27th, I don't have any guests. I'm going to tell you right now that that's when we're going to be doing a live broadcast from Grandfather Mountain. And I have a ton of awesome guests that will be joining us, but we're going to keep it a surprise. So stay tuned for April 27th. On May 4th, we have David Griffin coming on. He is promoting also exopolitical activism and UFO disclosure in Great Britain. You can check out exopoliticalgb.com. And David will be joining us. He tried joining us once, but we had some technical difficulties, so he's coming back on the show and talking about the disclosure in Great Britain also. Also on the same show, we're going to have Kelly Jones. Kelly Jones is an Akashic Records consultant and teacher, and live on the show here in Studio B, Kelly is local here in Nashville, North Carolina. She will be doing a live Akashic Records reading on me. We're going to open up the Akashic Records, and I'm asking some questions and see what we find. So you can check out kellyjones.net. On May 11th, we have a very exciting interview. I talked to Mary Rodwell myself. We have Mary Rodwell coming on the show. She is the ACERN president. That is Australian Close Encounters Research Network. ACERN is a resource and support network for all of those close encounter experiences. She also works with the Star Children and Star Seeds. They have a Star Seed project. And telling us more about that on the following week, on May 18th, we will be having Dr. Richard Boland from drbolin.com, who's also partners with Mary. So we're going to have them both back-to-back. It'll be awesome. Dr. Richard Boland also is an educator specializing in star kids and star seed adults, and also is a professor of psychology and star cultures, an anthropologist, and certified clinical hypnotherapist. He'll be joining us on May 18th. On May 24th, Dr. Kent Mezplay, the 2012 presidential candidate for the Green Party, will also be joining us once again. We had an amazing interview in time with him, so he's coming back on the show, and that will be May 24th. You can check out drkentmezplay.org. And also on that show, we're going to have Patricia Corey joining us. She's a renowned author, teacher, lecturer, and spiritual guide to ancient sacred sites. She has over 10 books published in over 17 languages, and she's also going to be giving us some Syrian High Council updates, and she'll also be coming on as our new monthly update guest from the Syrian High Council. She'll be joining us once a month. You can check out StarCNGRadio.com. I just put out some information on that. You can check out her site, SyrianRevelations.net. And also something new that we're going to be bringing to all the listeners out there is we're going to be getting monthly anonymous updates That's right. Anonymous updates from the Anon organization. And the person who will be joining us giving those updates is Bertus Orcus from Anon. And we have some interesting stuff. I spoke to them yesterday and today. They're doing amazing stuff to spread truth, light, and awareness. So we'll now be getting Anon monthly updates. And also monthly updates from the head organizer, one of the head organizers of Occupy Wall Street. We have Edward Twitchell Hall III, a.k.a. Ted, who's been on the show, also be joining us once a month and possibly every other week to be giving us live Occupy Wall Street updates. And we have also Nisha Duncan from New Zealand, Avatar Master, who will be joining us. I spoke to her last week. I don't know when she's coming on, but she's coming on soon. And as always, check out StarseedEnergyRadio.com for the latest news and updates. Like our Facebook page. Leave some comments on the iPodcast, and that's how we can get more rankings and reach more people. And you can always find new information, articles, and stuff like that on my Twitter feed. So check out StarseedEnergyRadio.com. And if you have an Android cellular phone, check out Amazon.com. We got the new Starseed Energy Radio Android app out there. And the iPhone app is coming soon to all the iPhone users out there. And with that, Star family, the time is now. Start telling your family and friends the good news that we're multi-dimensional beings of light and love. The transformation of the planet is happening. 2012 is here. Exciting things are happening. Do not be in fear. Earth changes, economic collapse, that stuff is coming. But it's all part of taking place of the master plan, the divine plan, of a new system being implemented, a new way of life, and it's exciting, exciting times. Remember, we're all leaders out there. Every single one of us is a leader. We lead our own ways, so awaken us one by one is how we do it. And with that, we're going to end on some more DJ Cries music, and that track we played just before we cut to the break was Sumerian Technology, and this last track is called Silver Sky. With that, Star Fam, I will be with you all, see with you all, and send out some light and love with you all next week. Enjoy.